All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special reaction episode to the Diamondbacks acquiring AJ Puck from the Miami Marlins in exchange for prospects Davison De Los Santos and Andrew Pintar. Joining me today is Lindsay. So, Lindsay, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So, for those that have watched the been on the podcast before, I've had Lindsay on for when the Diamondbacks have played the Braves this season. Lindsay also writes about the Miami Marlins and is also a prospects aficionado, so there's a lot to unpack here. So, I kind of want to, first thing is like, what is your impression of the trade? So, I know you've posted that already on X, but kind of just want to get your thoughts on that.
I think I like the trade for both teams, right? When you look at the Diamondbacks, having a power lefty who is not necessarily completely untouchable by other lefties, but in the last three seasons has an ERA under 2 and lefties are batting 165 against him. It's great having that power lefty out of the bullpen. And then a lot of the issues he's had against right-handers has come to home runs, and he's fixed a lot of that. And so he's going to be a really good bullpen piece that has multiple years of control. And then you look at it from Miami's perspective, and they've been too willing in the past, and even this year, the trade they made for Luis Arraez, to settle for prospects that were more floor than ceiling, right? You were just trying to make the big league club incrementally better. Jacob Marcy, Nathan Martorella don't have any sort of standout tools. At best, they're going to be average offensively, average defensively, and they just make the team, you know, 1 to 2 wins better, a little bit more competent over the course of a season. DDLS has massive power. Now, he also has some flaws, and he's by no means a finished product, but massive power that can translate, if they can finish the development of him, can translate into somebody who can legitimately impact games at the major league level. And that's just the thing they haven't had, is that impact bat in the lineup. So I like the deal here as far as what the Diamondbacks get for this year and for next year, and then what the Marlins have the opportunity to develop if they can make him a little bit better, and then throw in Pintar. That's just even better, a little cherry on top as a guy to develop for a couple seasons.
Yeah, because the way I look at it, and this is my insight, obviously I think I probably have the lowest opinion of Davison De Los Santos for those that write about the Diamondbacks farm system. I actually didn't have him in my top four. I put a top 10 list out there, and I also included four more at the bottom.
Right.
I actually did not put him on there because of those two big flaws. The two flaws, the first one being
the chase.
It's 40. It's near the top for AAA hitters. It's like 40. I think Fangraphs has him at 43.9, Statcast 43 for chasing out of the strike zone. That's probably number one. But if they can fit, that's the one thing that Marlins need to fix is pitch recognition, knowing which angles he should probably lay off of, tunnels, because he can barrel up any fastball in the strike zone and hit it 115 miles an hour to all fields. That's his biggest strength, is he can homer on any fastballs in the strike zone and breaking ball mistakes. And that's an area I feel like he wasn't necessarily strong at last year, was rolling over a lot, hitting a lot of pull side ground balls. This year, the ground ball rate has significantly dropped. So he was from the upper 50s down to the upper 40s, the ground ball rate. So that's an encouraging sign. Also, there's a lot less movement in his swing. So he's very still. Once the pitch comes in, he kind of sets up his hands high, and then when the pitcher starts his motion, he'll get into a better hitting position. So I believe there is a capability that he'll improve his swing. I just don't know how much he'll improve the selection.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's the type of guy that can put 30 home runs in a lineup almost overnight, and the Marlins certainly have the capability of getting him every day at bats, because with the records that they have now, there's no one on that team should consider their job to be secure.
Yeah, it's definitely a scenario. Josh Bell's contract is up after this year. They're hoping to move him before this deadline, even if they get almost nothing back. And so Behind him, there's no appointed successor at first base. Jake Berger can play it. He's your third baseman, but he can play it. You've got Troy Johnston in the system, late round pick in AAA. He can play it. You have a bunch of guys who can play first, but nobody's anointed. So DDLS will have the opportunity to compete for a starting job at first base. Obviously, you have the DH spot as well, but it's all going to come down to can he fix some of those flaws. And if he does, I mean, we saw last year what Jorge Soler did to that lineup when he was able to get out there and consistently hit for power. And then he walked in free agency and they had no plan to replace him. And there's nobody in the organization that really profiles this guy who could replace him. And DDLS could conceivably hit that same power ceiling, just needs a lot of work from a pitch recognition and a hitting perspective to get there. So I get it.
Do you think he's a guy that the Marlins might take a look at in this final 2 months of 2024 and see what kind of value, or do you think they'll just keep him in the rest of the year in AAA? Because if he were in Arizona, I don't think he would see an at-bat at the major league level.
It depends on what happens with Bell. If they can find somebody to take Bell off their hands, I do think they'll have playtime open at first base. I do think you'll see some of both Johnston and DDLS, depending on who's hot when he reports to AAA Jacksonville. But if Josh Bell sticks around, there's just nowhere to play him, right? They have DH, they have first base occupied on almost a daily basis between Brian De La Cruz at DH and outfield, and then Josh Bell at first base and DH. So it kind of depends on if Josh Bell gets traded. But I wouldn't be shocked to see them give him a couple weeks just to see what he can do and help him figure out this is what you have to learn to be ready for the major league level. Probably all depends on how he hits when he first gets to Jacksonville, whether he is slow on the transition or whether he comes out firing on the transition.
And another thing that the Diamondbacks certainly weren't necessarily thrilled about was his effort on defense. I think, like I said, he's a guy you kind of have to work hard on to get him to be a playable major league first baseman defensively. From what I've seen in the fall league, he definitely has the range and mobility to handle first base, but it's a matter of consistency, in my opinion, and getting him interested in developing on that side of the ball. But ultimately, if the bat plays, the bat plays. With that type of bat, you'll find a spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, hitting tanks is fun, but like you need to be a complete baseball player to have more opportunities, and so that's going to be something. It's going to be interesting to see, given the rumors of Jazz Chisholm and kind of what's, you know, the leadership behind that and the effort that you've seen in the past. It'll be interesting to see what they can do with DDLS if and when he does get into that major league clubhouse, and if Jazz Chisholm is there or not, obviously.
And going on to the other prospect in trade, Andrew Pintar is a guy that really before this season, I think, had his career almost stalled out because of injuries. He had an injury that he was a day one prospect in his draft year, but an injury about a month into his junior season ended up causing him to fall to the fifth round, signed for an underslot deal with the Diamondbacks in the fifth round. This year has really been the first year he's been healthy all season. You can see the numbers that he's put up. And he was their best player offensively for their high A affiliate across the board, which is why he's in double A. But he's a guy that's intriguing, but yeah, I was gonna say he's a guy that's intriguing, probably a fourth outfielder type. But in the Marlins case, obviously there's plenty of room to give him a look, but in a couple years.
Yeah, the fact that he's been exclusively in center field this year versus moving around between center and left and second base, I think has been is one of the selling points there. This is an organization that has people that can play multiple outfield positions. They even have a guy who plays both shortstop or second base and center field, but they're kind of lacking on true center fielders, right? Part of the reason they got Jacob Marcy in the Lisa Rice deal was they needed true center fielders behind Jazz Chisholm. And so I think that's interesting. I do have concerns. The situation of his arm strength not being great because of a shoulder injury kind of reminds me of the Corbin Carroll situation where his arm strength wasn't necessarily great because of a shoulder injury. And so if he's not in center, I see him probably being stuck in left. But I do think there's a pathway to playing time in center field, especially as we talked about, if they do move on from Jazz Chisholm. you don't have a same situation. Other than Jacob Marcy, you don't really have a lockdown center fielder who is your next guy up. And even Marcy has questions about whether he'd be average or above average in center field. So there's play time there. Just a question of, can you develop the impact? I don't feel like the exit velocities were really that great for Pintar. And so kind of a classic Marlins guy, right? Rangy on defense, decent hit tool, doesn't have a ton of power. And then obviously that ballpark doesn't help with power production. So kind of similar to the Marcy and Martorella pickups, more floor than ceiling, but you have a little bit of everything in this deal.
Yeah, and then I give you my take on Puck. Like, the Diamondbacks don't necessarily have a left-hander in the back of their bullpen. They can slot in the back of their bullpen. Joe Mantiply is a solid league average left-hand reliever that will get the job done 80% of the time, basically. But he's not a guy you want to have facing Jake Cronenworth with your season online. This is what the AJ Puck deal is about. Who pitches to Jake Cronenworth with the tying run at third base, two outs, and the Diamondbacks cling on to a one-run lead for the final wild card spot? That's what this move is designed to address.
Yeah, and going back and pulling reliever-only stats for AJ Puck for the last three seasons, like I mentioned, 188 ERA, 165 batting average allowed. He's only given up six homers and 220 batters faced. He is very, very good against lefties. And when you look at kind of what he does, I mean, he's a huge, just like 6'7", good velocity to his fastball, does a lot of things that make at-bats really uncomfortable for lefties. Didn't work out as a starter. He's had enough arm injuries where he changes mechanics to try to go deeper in the games. That caused all the walk issues. But as a lefty reliever, he's amazing. And I'm not worried about him facing righties. His in like 417 batters faced the last three seasons as a righty, or against righties as a reliever, he's allowed a 403 ERA, but a lot of that is colored by all of the home runs he's given up. Almost 9 of those 13 home runs he gave up came off of four-seam fastballs, and all of them prior to this year. He hasn't given up a home run on a fastball to a righty hitter this year. And it's just, that's been an area of improvement that he's made. And so I'm not as worried about the platoon splits as I would have been had you made this trade last year. I feel like the big weakness he's had against righties, he's alleviated that somewhat. And so, a dude, you're going to be able to throw him into the eighth inning. I think you could throw him into the ninth inning. If they got two or three lefties coming up, throw him in the ninth. He'll get your save. I'm not worried about it. I think it's a good pickup for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I was going to say, when AJ Puck comes in the game, the opposing manager is going to empty his bench of right-handed hitters for sure. He hasn't done so against Joe Mantiply, but that's the kind of thing, like I said, the platoon splits being less of an issue, I think, makes it much more easier to just slot him into a certain inning. Like, for example, I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to take Sewald out of the ninth inning, even though he's been a little bit shaky of late. Yeah, I think when you look at the Diamondbacks' last seven losses, four of them were because Sewald being unable to lock down a save. I think he had three blown saves in a row. I think the last one was against Atlanta.
He did have three in a row. I remember talking about that from the Atlanta perspective when he came in the game. I'm like, well, he's blown the last two. Maybe he'll blow this one. And in fact, he did. And Atlanta got the win. And it feels like that was the last win Atlanta's gotten. They're on a tough stretch right now. But yeah, it's. I think AJ Puck is a dude. He can do whatever you need him to do, right? If you need him to be a reliever, he can be a setup man. He can do that. If you need him to close, he can do that. I think it's a great pickup, and I think he's going to end up being one of the better relievers moved at this deadline. And you've got team control for next year too.
Yeah, he's under control through 26, I believe. So they have somebody who has experience closing, because he's got 15 saves from 23. It's like, okay, who's going to close after Paul Sewald walks in free agent? Because I don't think they're going to re-sign him. It's like, okay, who's the next guy? Okay, now you got Puck or Martin or Justin Martinez. And having AJ Puck in that previous closer experience in the first half of 23, it's like, okay, we have someone who's been there. You don't have to roll the dice on someone who's completely unproven. And of course, Justin Martinez will eventually be, I think, the closer, because his stuff is, I guess you say, the least is probably the most matchup proof. of the entire bullpen, because if he's throwing strikes at 100 with what we're now calling demonic splitters, it's like, it doesn't matter what handedness the batter is.
Yeah. You can be a lefty or a righty. You're not getting a hit. It's fine. Yeah. Makes sense.
So, yeah. So I think, like I said, it's a good short-term deal because it gives the Diamondbacks, I think, a credible bullpen. They don't have to necessarily burn out all their top arms, and I think that's kind of why they fell short in the World Series. Is like their top arms were completely burned out by the time they got into the World Series, in my opinion. So I think,
starting off as one of the last seeds and having to fight through the wild card round and then fight to get there and playing those long series like they did. Something I feel like Atlanta learned that lesson going down the stretch in 22. Like we saw in 21 how having a strong bullpen won them the World Series. And then they rode those guys so hard in 22, trying to chase down the Mets, that when they got the postseason, they were shot. It feels like that was a scenario that you had to avoid. And I remember talking to John Smoltz a couple weeks ago for an interview, and he talked about what you need to win in the postseason. You need three hot hitters, three hot starters, and he's like, you need three hot relievers. And you've got to have at least three because you have to be able to distribute the load amongst multiple guys. You can't just run the same three out there every single night, because by the end of the postseason, you're done. And I think that's kind of what happened there. So getting Puck and having him for a couple of playoff runs is going to be big. And honestly, it's not too high of a price to pay to get him.
So we talked about, obviously, who would you say in the Diamondbacks case, who would you have as your three hot stars, three hot hitters, and then your three hot relievers? Obviously, AJ Puck's going to fit in the category of the relievers.
Yeah, it's so this really, for me, I'm thinking about what has happened in every game that the Braves have played against the Diamondbacks. Like, what's been the issue? Is I feel like not all of the starters have been there, right? We've seen issues where some of the games have been high scoring, some of the games have been low scoring. But I think about, like, Ketel Marte is definitely one of the hitters, right? It feels like Christian Walker's always been dangerous, and Lourdes Gurriel has been good against Atlanta. I think Eugenio Suarez, if he cannot strike out as much, is another threat. But, I mean, you could have three or four there. When it comes to starting pitching, that's kind of the big question for me is, okay, who are the starting pitchers in this situation? Because I'm not sure, I'm not really sure who I'm scared of. I guess, like, Zach Gallen, when he's on, he's missed time. Brandon Pfaadt has been good this year, I feel like. But I worry about having the three starters. I think by the time the postseason gets here, you could have the three starters, right? You could have something where Eduardo Rodriguez comes back, Merrill Kelly comes back. You could have guys who could come back and do that. But right now, Ryan Nelson doesn't scare me. Jordan Montgomery doesn't scare me. Slade Tosoni doesn't scare me. Tommy Henry doesn't scare me. Like, I'm just thinking about the guys I've seen this year. Getting that third guy, it's going to have to be – Zach Gallen's going to have to be one of those guys. Fought, and you're going to need somebody who's been hurt, like Eduardo Rodriguez, to step up and be that third guy. It's not been a – it's not been easy going for the rotation for the Diamondbacks this year, it feels like, from the outside at least.
Yeah, I would agree. Like I said, the Diamondbacks, I feel like I'm pretty comfortable going into series with Gallen and Pfaadt. Nelson's okay. Like, he's been on a decent roll where he's giving them six innings every time out. Sometimes he looks good, like against Chicago, or other times he's going to grind through, or Troy likes to call it a grinder outing. That was with the case against the Kansas City Royals, but Nelson's giving them some stability in the rotation right now, even if it's a coin flip whether he's actually pitching well or not. But I think, obviously, if you can get one of Kelly, Montgomery, or Rodriguez to step up down the stretch, I think Arizona's in pretty good shape, because then you have there's your four starters, because I think Nelson's going to end up being in the rotation. Now, there is a situation
where there's always going to be somebody who, like, isn't necessarily start. Like, if you have a fourth rotation guy, he won't always be starting in a short series, but he's going to be able to come in and get you through the order one time and bridge to your bullpen. So it's always good to have that fourth guy. And I think there's plenty of options. It's just who is healthy, who is effective, and who steps up.
Yeah, because you can either go to Nelson there, because he's pitched behind an opener twice against the Dodgers this year. Slade Ciccone's as good numbers first time against the lineup, except against Atlanta, but... Slade Ciccone has good first-time numbers. They're actually moving him into the bullpen. So I think he's a guy that could be a factor down the stretch in the playoff series as a bridge guy. because the times to the order penalty has really hit them hard this year. Like second time through the order, I think opponents are hitting like 370 something, 370 or something like that.
That's one of those you ask them to go out there and like, hey, get through the order one time. Ideally, that's three full innings, but whatever it is, get through the order one time. And we'll go to another bulk guy. We'll go to a starter who's now in the bullpen, or we'll get into the bullpen early. That's kind of the situation there.
Yeah, because pretty much Gallen and Fodder, the only two guys you want to even want to have on the mound when the lineup turns over a third time. When you look at the current Diamondbacks rotation, even if Kelly and Rodriguez are back, they're not going to be able to build up the stamina, enough stamina that you can put them at full blast when the postseason starts. Maybe you can with Kelly. I don't think you can with Rodriguez. That's fine. They have plenty of right-handed arms that can give them multiple innings in a postseason game. Seawall's just the only one who can't.
Yeah, which I get that. That makes sense.
Justin Martinez is a guy I think will be pit. And I think with the Diamondbacks three relievers, I think Justin Martinez is the first name you circle. Like he's the playoff X factor, kind of like Ginkle was last year. It's like, okay, if this guy pitches well, this is a guy that can give you two shutdown innings. And of course, Kevin Ginkle has kind of slowly come back to be the same guy as the postseason. Ryan Thompson's been a little bit shaky, but the last two or three outings, he's locked it down. So I feel like if Arizona has a lead after the fifth inning, I think they have the bullpen to close it out.
It's just something where you need to make sure you're not doing that every single night, right? You need to try to space it out a bit. And obviously in the postseason with the off days and travel days and things like that, it's a little bit better, but it's something where right now, you have guys you know could step up, right? Kevin Ginkle could get hot. You have guys who could do it. It's just a question of who are our three every single night, and can we mix other guys into that three to not burn those three out by the time you get in the World Series like last year?
Yeah, and then kind of going out into the wild cards, the entire wild card picture. You got six teams within three games of the top wild card spot: Atlanta, San Diego, St. Louis. The Mets, who have gone from being eulogized in the middle of May to winning like 80% of their ball games the last 2 months. And Francisco Lindor going nuts over that entire stretch.
Yeah, he is legitimately an MVP candidate. I have him, off the top of my head, probably third in the race behind Shohei Ohtani and Bryce Harper right now. And that's just a testament. I mean, he's the only one of those guys providing defensive value. But that's just, he's been absurd. He's batting, since he moved to leadoff, he's batting over 300. And it's been absolutely nuts. And this is what you paid him for, right? He's living up to the contract you paid him for, I guess, kind of technically, finally. But don't ask Mets are...
Yeah, don't ask Mets radio hosts about that. They think he stinks.
Yeah, well, if he stinks, there'd be a bunch of other teams, if they could afford him, would absolutely take him. But it's all this is a big series, them in Atlanta this weekend. They're only a half game back of Atlanta. They won game one of four and a walk-off in 10. And so, Atlanta's banged up. The Mets are pretty healthy. Let's see if the Braves are still in the lead in the wild card at the end of this. And then Arizona's one game back from a wild card spot, and you're playing the team. It's right behind you in the Pirates. So, it's going to be interesting to see this weekend what happens and how they, because this is the last series headed into the trade deadline. So this is where you're making your decisions is this weekend. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, and we already know where the Diamondbacks stand on where they want to go in.
Going for it.
So I think Hazen didn't necessarily rule out any extra moves. Where would you look to add to the Diamondbacks roster? Just kind of like an outside perspective.
For me, I think it's tough because you have potential performers on offense, right? Corbin Carroll has struggled. You've had guys who were injured. Alec Thomas missed some time. You have guys third base feels like Eugenio Suarez is giving you defense, but it feels like offensively you're not getting the impact you need to get. Some of the strikeouts feel like they're timely strikeouts. So I feel like if you could find an offensive performer, you could plug in at third base, that would maybe be something to go after. But it's kind of hard to see slam dunk improvements this year like you had last year, right? I feel like the outfield mix, for the most part, is pretty good. Again, you need Carroll to perform, but I feel like the outfield mix is pretty good. I feel like, obviously, first base, second base, behind the plate, a lot of that's handled. I could see them going out to get a starter that they were comfortable with, if you got to the postseason, simply because we had the questions about who the third guy was. But there's so many options. It'd be really easy to just pass on that. So honestly, relief pitching, because who doesn't need more relief pitching? And third base are probably my priorities, but I also don't think there's a lot of great options at third base this year. So I guess I would look for another reliever or a guy who could do both roles and maybe a third baseman, but it's not super easy to see obvious upgrades at this point.
Yeah, because I know with Suarez, obviously the first half of the year he's been downright awful, but the last month he's been on quite the tear, I think.
Did I miss it? The last 30 days, he's batting .299 with six homers. See, that's me not having a big enough look into what's happening recently. And so, at like that point, he's your second best hitter behind Kettle Marte. And so it's same situation, I guess. I don't quite know how you upgrade at that point if you're happy with Gino there at third base. I don't see any super obvious upgrades other than maybe some more pitching because you can never have enough.
Yeah, I was thinking that I think the Diamondbacks should target another back end arm. Not necessarily, they don't need a closer per se, because like I said, Seawald's the closer, but certainly someone that we don't have Thompson and Ginkle today, or okay, Justin Martinez pitched two incredible innings yesterday. We need someone that can pitch that eighth inning on those type of days, because I feel like and this was the case against Chicago, like they burnt out their entire bullpen to win the series, but in the third game, they need to see well more in the third game of the series than the first. So, but because they burnt out Seawald to win the first two games of the series, he wasn't available for the third game. So they had to bump up Martinez in the ninth inning, and a couple hits later, the Cubs tied it. And then they just didn't. And then at that point, they just did not have the pitching to win the baseball game once Martinez blew the save. And Martinez will be a closer. It's just not this year or even next year.
And that's one of those, it's just kind of back end. Even if it's not closers, back-end relievers are the thing that really everybody can use, right? There's no team that's like, we're completely set on back-end relief arms, right? They all could use more, so I get it.
Yeah, Kyle Finnegan would be an interesting fit. Diamondbacks kind of have a relatively decent idea what it would take to land Finnegan because they executed a similar trade last year with Seawald. Or they could do the same with Estevez if they wanted to go rental market. For closer experience that doesn't necessarily have to close. Kopech could be a buy low, but this is talking about a guy who has an ERA of 5. But it's hard. You have to put an asterisk around everything about Chicago. It's a team that isn't playing anywhere close to the standard of Major League Baseball this year in terms of effort.
Yeah. And so because of that, it's also hard to figure out who's going to get better when we take him out of that environment and who's not. The Braves have made a habit of going to Colorado and grabbing relievers out of Colorado, bring them into Atlanta, make one change to them, and see them get exponentially better. They went and got Pierce Johnson last year at the deadline, had an ERA in the high 5s when he came over. After he got to Atlanta, his ERA was below 1 the rest of the year, right? Because they figured out better situation, 1, better environment, and then 2, here's a small tweak you can make. And so it's like, what do we do here? How do we make that work? Who can we go out and get that can legitimately make us better? I think that's kind of a tough thing there.
That's definitely a thing. Cause obviously the White Sox are probably looking to sell. I don't think Luis Robert is going to be dealt. That's what John Heyman posted, but obviously it's a fire sale in Chicago. And I'm sure the Braves are going to be looking in on that as well for starting pitching. That's where I see it. But any final thoughts on the AJ Puck trade?
I think this is a good deal. I don't think that the cost is that bad for Arizona simply because of the risk involved with a guy like DDLS. And I think Puck is going to be Puck's going to be the best reliever traded at the deadline when we go back and we look at this at the end of the year. Because he's so good against lefties and he's gotten better against righties this year. So good deal here. Happy for Arizona. And again, it's multiple years of a guy who can legitimately help you in the most important situations in the game. I think it's a good deal.
All right. So thanks everyone for watching. Make sure to subscribe to the Snakes and Diamond podcast here on YouTube. Or if you're listening in, give us a 5-star review and give us a comment why what you like about the podcast. And, I said the trade deadline, we got one more week. There's going to be a lot of fireworks. We've already gotten, I think, like 3 or 4 big trades already in the last 24 hours. So make sure to stay tuned for that. There may be more episodes covering the trade deadline, especially the Dynamax land another arm.